Hello and welcome to my Caravan Industry Insights podcast. This podcast is for anyone working in the caravan industry, whether you're from a manufacturer, supplier or dealer here in the UK or elsewhere. So listen every week to hear insights, interviews and marketing tips to help keep you and your business more informed and successful. I'm John Rawlings, a journalist and communications expert with a lifelong passion for caravanning and 20 plus years PR and events experience in the car and caravan industries. From starting in the editorial team at Practical Caravan magazine to working in the press offices at Vauxhall, Volvo and Volkswagen, and now in my own business specialising in the caravan industry. Hello and welcome to another episode of my Caravan Industry Insights podcast. This week I've done an interview out and about, actually in a tent. So this is the first episode I've recorded in a tent. Not just any tent, this is a safari tent. In fact, a safari lodge, to give it its official name. Now, the only peril of recording something in that sort of environment is that, A, it's probably going to sound a little bit different acoustically, but also it chucked it down with rain at one point in the interview, so I hope you can hear it all right. But the person I'm interviewing is Mark Scott. He's the CEO of Clear Sky Safari Lodges, a company that she set up. Well, I'll let him explain the background to it. But I've looked at this sector of the caravan industry because I think it's an interesting one to show that all these alternative styles of accommodation that are available, it's a growing sector. It's bringing new people into campsites and that style of holiday. It's an area that I haven't really studied in any great depth before, and I thought it was definitely time to do it. Also, coincidentally, Mark and his company are actually based practically less than 10 miles away from me. So I thought it was a great opportunity to go meet face-to-face, have a tour of his display of safari tents. And that's why we did the interview inside one of them, making it real. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And I will catch up with you after the interview. So for this week's episode of my Caravan Industry Insights podcast, we're looking into the world of glamping, or more specifically, the safari tents at the moment. I'm here with Mark Scott from Clear Sky Safari Tents.
Yes, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Well, is that the right title?
Yes, that's good enough.
Cool. Yeah. And fortunately, you actually live about 10 miles or so from me, so I've come to visit you today. Yep. And we're actually in one of your safari tents, so I don't know what the acoustics are going to be like, but it'll make it sound real. So this is an interesting part of the caravan industry to me, because I know lots of campsites diversify in terms of units of accommodation. Yep. Going. We've already been talking about your safari tents at the Love to Stay campsite. Mm-hmm. At Salop Leisure, aren't they?
So they are, yeah.
Could you give me any quick examples of any other sites that we might know in the UK?
We provide the National Trust, the Caravan and Motorhome Club. We provide quite a lot to Park Dean Resorts, various parks all the way down the southwest. The Haven Holidays, we do quite a lot of away resorts. So, yeah, a range of sort of parks that you probably would know. And we're doing a fair amount up in the Lake District at work at the moment as well.
So cool. How long has your company been going then? Did you start it? What's your background?
Yeah, so I used to work in the holiday park industry, mainly, around Hemel Hempstead, which is where all the head offices are. So I was doing a fair amount of data analysis, data analytics. And in particular at Haven, I was freelance, but I was doing a project about how you could target people that are coming in to Park to see whether or not they were potential targets for selling statics and lodges to.
Right.
And it was around that sort of 2000, 2007, 2008 period when there was a bit of a downturn in the economy. So the amount of money coming on Park was getting less. And so the idea was, how can we get new football back on Park? And when I was looking at it, for me, the thing that jumped out was the idea of a different accommodation, different experience. I think if you go back to the sort of the 90s and the noughties, there was still that hangover of people wanting to go on holiday to a holiday park, and they were quite happy to have rows and rows and rows of statics. Mm-hmm. As long as the kids were, you know, running off and being safe, then it was pretty much that's it.
Right.
But the 25-45 age bracket, certainly in the 2000s onwards, has become much more experience orientated and much less willing to put up with the sort of standard approach to holiday parks. So the idea was to try and find something new. I'd been to Glastonbury of all places, and I met the people there with Camp Kerala, and I watched what they were doing. I mean, obviously, it's a very different product. It's a very short-term product, 5 days.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But very expensive. I mean, I'm going back some now, but I think at the time their most expensive bell tent was about at £9,000, I think, for the weekend. Their most expensive this year round was about £27,000. So it's very expensive.
To just rent it?
Yeah. I mean, it does.
Not buy it.
No. The tents are. Yeah. No, I mean, it does come with a. I think they bring you in by helicopter, and there's a
Road
down to the stage.
Right.
You get a butler, and it's a big thing. But the point was, it was experience.
Yes.
Because if you looked at the tents, you'd say, well, they're Pakistani tents, and they are, you know, they're okay, but they're not great quality. But when you dress them and you add the experience in, suddenly it becomes something new.
Yeah.
And so what I was looking for was something that I spent a good 2 years looking at options and trying to design stuff for myself. And the obvious thing was the sort of driving design criteria was it had to have separate bedrooms. You know, it couldn't be at the time there were a number of yurts around, these sort of single room random things.
Yeah.
Tended to be fairly poor quality. They tended to be, you know, cottage industry made. And it's a single room. And if it's raining outside, you're stuck in there with two kids and, you know, what do I do next month? And so it needed bedrooms. It needed to have a cooking and sitting area. So it was really a canvas lodge, which is why we call them lodges, not tents.
Okay.
I looked around the UK to try and get them made here. Spoke to a couple of companies, but no one could do the volume. And actually, to be honest, couldn't do the quality either.
Really?
There were a few companies around that were making marquees, but when they transferred over into this sort of market, it just didn't work. The framing was wrong, the guy lines. Because we want to sell into the time, but we were more or less exclusively a holiday park, or I was thinking about the holiday park, it shouldn't have guy lines. So otherwise, it won't film pitch, and you've got whole health and safety with the lights.
Yes.
So we moved away. So we had to have a design that would do that, and that's what really drove it. And then we found there's a factory down in Hungary who can churn these out, and they do 35-40 a week. They make
really well,
and the quality is excellent. Really good. Canvas comes from Holland, so it became an obvious thing to start getting made there.
Well, they're already making a similar product there.
They were, yeah. They were already.
So in Europe, was this already available in Europe?
Yes. Or fashion it was, yeah. I mean, not quite the same. But the whole European market for camping and glamping, not so much glamping, but camping and canvas is much bigger because of the weather.
Yes.
You know, you can go to the south of France, you can stay in one of these. And so a lot of them had those sort of cheap, how I call Halfords tents. I mean, that's unfair, but you know, they're 35 quid and you buy the whole thing and then you throw it away at the end of the season.
Right. Am I thinking of Eurocamp Canvas Holidays?
Yes, exactly.
Those sort of tents there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember those years ago being on the
site. Hot and sweaty.
I've never stayed in one, to be fair, but they seem very popular and get a lot of use. Yeah.
They do. And because of the weather. And so you can go, park, everything's in there. Yeah. You camp for a bit and off you go.
Yeah.
And the camping market is very different in particularly Holland, Germany, not so much France, funny enough, although there's a lot of holiday parks in France. Mm. But from a cultural point of view, the Europeans do go camping and in this case, glamping much, much more than other countries. And if you look at us, the UK, I mean, we've embraced this.
That's kind of
market.
Yeah.
But it is still mainly we set up in Scotland. In fact, we've got some in the Hebrides.
Really?
So it's probably as far north as you go.
Yeah.
But the bulk of the holiday industry is in two or three places. You know, it's the southwest Wales coast. It's the southwest, the whole of the southwest peninsula, running up to sort of Southampton and then Norfolk and stuff like that. And then you've got stuff everywhere else, but those are the sort of bolts because of the weather.
Yeah,
and
so we popular holiday destinations.
They are, exactly. Yeah. So we started making them. They were made for us down there, and we started selling them in the UK.
So when was it? What year was that then?
That would have been 2009. We got the film. So the first thing I did in 2009 was I put three here and started running my own glamping site, mainly to see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I had that experience. And we did a season and it did amazingly well. I mean, amazingly well. And then we kept that open for about 3 years, but we were getting busy with this. So we had to start cutting that back. But the tents are still there. So we know they last 12 years. So we started doing that and then we started selling. The first year, 2010, I sold my first tent. And that was a trip over sale. I mean, I was down talking to them about data analysis and they said, yeah, what I really need is, and I went, oh, I've got one of those. I'll have one. And so that was the first one we sold. And then the next year, I think we sold 30-ish. And now we're up to about 190, 200 in the last season. So we, and that's our sort of, you know, our roll rate at the moment. It's probably, well, a year before, like a COVID year, we sold 160 and sort of gone up from there, really.
So what, an average of about 200 tents a year?
I'd probably average about 180.
Yeah. Still, this is a respectable number.
It is, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're saying they obviously last years and years and years, yes. So you're not into replacing any of them yet. This is all conquest.
We're starting now to, just now, we just did a holiday park. They had 7 tents and we've just replaced the inner canvases. So the frame and the roof are fine. Mm-hmm. They're bomb-proof. But the canvas does get grubby and it starts being hit by UV and stuff. So over a period of time, but it's at that sort of, it seems to be at that sort of 8-year bracket that the holiday park's starting to replace the inner. Having said that, we've got some that are 10 years old on farms, on one particular farm down in Cornwall, and they've never replaced them. So, you know, it's about how you look after them. With due respect, holiday parks, they, you know, they've got a lot going on, and yes. The idea of spending enough time to look after these is just that much different. They don't take a lot of looking after, but, you know, on housekeeping, you've got grubby fingers on the canvas, you can do something about it.
Right.
You know, some kids put these greasy fingers all over.
Yeah.
But, you know, it tends not to. So we work on about, when we're doing our business plans with clients or their business plans, we tend to look at about 8 years as being at the, you know, hitting the inner canvas.
Right. Okay, so you can just replace the inner bit.
So the furniture's scaffold board, so that's not going anywhere. The roof and the frame, PVC and treated timber, so that's not going anywhere. It just really is, you can just replace just the caps. And in fact, the new tents that we do now, all the front is completely zipped out. So, because that's where the grubbiness gets. People come in the door and they put their hands on it.
Yes.
So, so you can now just replace the front.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I was going to ask if you made any changes to the basic design since...
We have. Every year there's something happens. Just things. I mean, I look at the old tents now. I mean, for instance, the very old tents were only 5 meters wide. These are all 5.4 now. So
Why is that? Is that just...
Well, we were pushing the design of the frame. So we these can take a Force 10 and Force 11 because, you know, they're strong. But if you go too wide, then you start having to put ground posts in, which would be something in the middle to support the ridge.
Right.
And we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because we want an open space. So we've got to 5.4 and that's a safe space. I mean, we did try it, but anything beyond 5.4, I mean, there are some out there at 5.5, but they, you know, they don't have the same strength. They've just got that much less rigidity in the frame. And so we stuck at 5.4. But that was a big step because that gave us a massive experience in terms of being able to add in shower rooms and such like. Other things like the windows, you know, you can replace the windows now. So the whole window comes out for fire escape. Not the front ones, but all the bedroom ones. So we put we used to put zips in the back so you could get out in the event of fire. But now what we've done is the windows will come out. So you can actually just get out that way.
Okay.
The tapes are thicker. The zips are better.
The fine-tune the design.
Yeah, I mean, the overall design. I mean, things like we put big windows in now. But overall, I mean, the actual design itself is still much the same.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that we learned over 12 years of how do you make the experience easier and smoother for the guest. And housekeeping.
Yeah.
So that's really... So we do things like... I mean, we've got a gas hob in here. But nearly all the tents we do now have got induction hobs, plug-in 13-amp induction hob, because you can clean them so much easier. And housekeeping becomes an issue. So, you know, it's not like a lodge where you go in and you do exactly the same every time. These are standard, but getting to the edges of the bed gets, you know, housekeeping. Basically, you have to take them into account.
Yeah, sure. Time is money, really, isn't it?
Time comes to,
you know, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So who are your main customers? Are they all still part?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we first started...
That thing has come through a big journey in that 12
years. It has. It really has.
Yeah. My first memory of glamping becoming more popular, and this sort of thing would be, is it Featherdown? Are they your tent?
No, they're not. They're a French make. And the Featherdown was interesting because they were early in the market, what they were doing was creating a brand and experience-led product, which was a good thing to do.
And they were all on farms or private.
They were all on farms. So the deal was that you are the farmer.
Yeah.
You want to put these tents up. You had to go and get all of the permissions, so planning permission. You had to put in all the infrastructure. Although the Featherdown farms didn't have electric, they did have water and drainage. So you had to do all of that, and then you had to deliver the product. And the problem was with that was that the farmers were getting 20%, roughly, and Featherdown was keeping 80%. And so the economics didn't make a huge amount of sense.
Has it stopped now then?
No, it's still going. Yeah. Although it's not grown. So the guy that started originally, I think I'm right saying, was Centerparks, Dutchman. And he had this idea of this holiday company.
Yeah.
And he set it up. And it was very Guardian reader. And it was right on message.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a lot of, if you hadn't been on a Featherdown Farm holiday sort of thing.
Right.
But it was very, and it still is, it's still very basic, which sounds all very romantic, mm-hmm. but, quite frankly, when you're trying to play Scrabble and your kid's the banker in Monopoly and they're nicking all the £10 notes, you need light. I mean, you need experience.
Yeah.
And so it was a very, it was a very slow range of product and actually worked very well and still does.
Yeah.
But it's much, much more niche now. It's much more wild glamping, really. In that sense, it's not really luxury. And so they did that, and they did very well.
Yeah.
But what we were doing was we were coming in, we were going to the farms and saying, because the thing with Featherdown was they provided the tent, so there was no capital cost to you.
Right, and then they did all the marketing and everything.
They did the marketing and the booking.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were very prescriptive. You had to, sell these crisps, or you had to have this in your honesty shop. And, it was all very on market products, which is great.
But it wasn't
really a marketable and expandable and scalable business.
Right.
And so anyway, unfortunately, rather sadly, the chap died and it got taken over by a couple of guys, and they've really run it in a different direction. That's it. They did start trying to do these sort of cowboy lodges about 7 or 8 years ago, and I've never seen any, so I don't think it went very far. So anyway, but that's still there. But that's about it, really. And it wasn't the same product. I mean, we were looking, because of my background with holiday products, I was looking at a product that you could sell a lot of and get a lot of people into. And so that really sort of drove us down that path into, as I say, Haven Holidays, Part D Resorts, Part Resorts as it was, then Part D Resorts. So yeah, that's really.
And do you now sell direct to farmers?
We do. So about 40%. So when we first started, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
When we first started, a lot of our sales, probably 60-70% volume wise, were into farms.
Were they really? Wow.
Because of the diversifications.
Yeah. The extra income for farmers.
Exactly. Yeah. But as we concentrate and focus more on the holiday part market, so I sort of take over. And I would say 60-70% of our volume now is holiday products. About 20% is farms, the other 10% things like farm tractions and other weird and wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
You just get.
So if a farmer wanted one, can you do that? Or is it more normal for people to get half a dozen?
You can buy one, no problem. And some do, but the advice is you get two as a minimum.
Right.
Because of that group book. So you often get, because it's 25-45 family.
Yes.
So because holidays are about, family life cycle. It's about 5-year chunks.
Right.
So when you first have children, you've got babies, then you go on a certain type of holiday until they're about five.
Very true.
And then when they're five, you go on a certain type of holiday until they're 10.
Yes.
And then another one from 10 to 15. And then after 15, that's it. They're in the pub. But so you're going in those chunks, and so it really there are other things. So I can't remember what I'm saying now, but we were looking at holiday parts, And so what people were doing, what holiday parts were starting to do, was put these, because they had the bedrooms, because they've got the space, they've got the living space outside.
Mm.
They're relatively low cost compared to the lodges that they were putting in. Then it was an obvious market for us to expand into. So as I say, now we probably, I would think probably 70% actually of our market is holiday.
Okay, that's interesting. And you've got a range of tents.
We do different models. This is our baby. This is the Comet. And it's slightly smaller. It's only 4.5 metres wide. But the whole principle of it was really to try and provide a lower cost, lower price entry market.
Yeah.
And also to allow for parks that had really nice shower blocks and so on.
Oh, yeah.
But they still wanted this luxury in here.
Yeah.
So these don't come, this model doesn't come with a shower and toilet in
it. Yeah.
Whereas most of our tents do. We do the woody range. We do three main sizes, up to 49 square meters. We have just started making a Woody 4, which is 60 square meters, which is big. I mean, it is huge.
Yeah. What was the one you showed me at the top?
So the top one there is 49. It's 49 internal square meters.
And that's big.
It is. Yeah, it is. So imagine the 60.
Yeah, it's a bit further.
So, and we do a lot of that. We do dining tents for a number of parks now where you put one of these up and it goes, all the sides roll up. So they use it as dining space. We did some work with Guy Ritchie, providing him with some tents to go over this cooking table that he has. We did a couple of film sets, just all sorts really, but that's in the sort of the 10% market.
Interesting though. So the business has grown successfully quite quickly.
Massive. Well, no, it's grown every year. Definitely.
Well done.
The growth points have been more and less. Last year was crazy. I mean, we went up by nearly 30%.
Really?
And so I think this year, I don't know. My feeling is last year, a lot of holiday parks are reporting a lower footfall. And in fact, we've got a big project for a safari park that's been put on hold because their footfall was down. So my gut feel is that this year is going to be slow, because the holiday bookings weren't there last year. I actually think holiday bookings are going to go up through the roof this year because, you know, even now I was talking to one of the park groups and their ABs, their advanced books, are already up on pre-COVID. So I think that's going to be interesting.
Interesting.
And there's a number of new players coming into the big park market groups. There's an American company called Cove Communities I think they've only been over about 18 months, but I think that's already up to about 9 or 10 parks. And they're working really, really hard. A lot of experience in that company and doing a lovely job. Another new group is Lover Parks. And again, really, really high quality parks. Very high quality.
Mm. And again, With lodges.
Yeah, with the canvas lodges, yes. Yeah. But also, remember, holiday parks, their margin, their profit comes from selling lodges and stuff.
Right,
And so what these do is provide the holiday park market with a new footfall. So people will come into, so if you've got 10 of these in your park, people will book these who would never go on a caravan holiday in their lives, but they will do this.
Yes.
And so they get on park, assuming experience is good enough, which it mainly is, then, you know, they're an instant captive.
Yeah.
And also they tend to be Waitrose shoppers, and they tend to be driving, they're that sort of that racket.
I get it.
And so they're more likely to have the money necessary to buy the lodges and the settings.
As you say, footfall, selling
it's
now.
New
concept.
Footfall, it's new demographic.
I was wondering whether people went on to buy their own tents or a motorhome or caravan, but you're thinking it's more
statics and lodgings. Obviously people do. Love to stay, we were talking about earlier.
Of course.
I mean, he does sell, definitely.
Yeah.
People will go on these and then they'll go and buy a motor. I mean, that does happen.
Yeah. That's the rain coming in. In here.
That's quite a storm.
I don't know if that can be heard through the microphone or not, but anyway, it'll come and go. We'll just have to play.
He sells caravans and motorhomes as a result. He first went to Cambridge, didn't he?
And it's quite loud, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's coming down. Even the dogs coming from outside.
So love to say, they do. There's definitely information we've got that shows that people do go from these into buying statics and lodges.
Right.
But the important thing also is the on-market upspend. People will spend more in the restaurants. They'll spend more in the gaming areas. They'll spend more in the bar.
Right.
So as an individual, people who come blabbering are going to be spending more money.
Cool, that makes sense. So were you one of the first in this market? So have you
I think so. There's a company in the Midlands that they're a marquee company, and they make a marquee type product. So it's really a marquee steel frame, but with canvas. And they sell a few. But I mean, as I say, we're at about 100 or 200 a year. I think they're at about 10 or 15. So
that's
a much, much lower market.
Are you a market leader then, would you say?
Yeah. Right, we're the largest by far. We've got a good... if you say I've stayed in a safari tent in the UK, the chances are it's one of ours.
Right.
We've got about 80-85% of the market.
Excellent. Gosh, yeah. So I first saw your products at the holiday Park, is it Holiday Park? Is an innovation show?
Innovation show, yeah.
Whatever. Did they have one last year? Maybe it was.
Oh, they did. Yep.
Did they?
Yeah.
It wasn't there last year. It was probably a couple of years ago in that case. But, and you're obviously this year's show.
Yes. Yeah, we'll be there. We've always caught it. So the two shows we've always caught it were the glamping show and the park innovation. I mean, the Holiday Park innovation show is part of five shows. So you've got Holiday Park, you've got Farm Innovation, you've got Country House. And we're right in the border between farm and holidays. So that's where we are.
Right.
And we do a lot of, I do one of the keynote speeches there, always have done. And it's a good show. I mean, the glamping show this year was good. We've done that. We didn't do the COVID year. They did put a show on, but it was all very sort of distanced.
Yes.
And actually we were worried about our team getting it and then the company not being able to function.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it that year, but otherwise we've done the Bradbury show and the Holiday Car show all the time. But yeah, the Holiday Car, we do look forward to it. It's 2 days of pressure. We get very, very busy all the time.
Why is it only 2 days then? Have they not thought about extending it a bit?
Cost, really. It's very expensive. I think you can spend a lot of money going to that show. There are costs associated with going to the farm show that you just don't anticipate until you've done it. We bring everything up on a juggernaut. Well, it's palletized, basically. It's not always a juggernaut. But anyway, we have to lift it off, get it in the hall, dump it. We then have to build the tent.
Yeah.
And then we have to palletize it, get it forklift back out again. Just the forklifting between, and it's like 100 meters max. The forklifting costs $2,500.
Right.
It's such a rip-off. It really is terrible. But the company, they've got a monopoly and can't do anything about it.
Oh, that's a lucrative day for them.
Oh, my God. I'd love to be a shareholder in that company. So it's very expensive to do. But we've always done well out of it. So, yeah.
So is this sector still growing then?
Seems to be.
Holidays.
Yeah. I mean, there's always every year there's the conversation.
You've had the big staycation boom. That must have been
huge
for you.
Yeah. I mean, one of the numbers we use as a metric for our business is passenger numbers at Gatwick. Gatwick's 45 minutes down the road. And we look at, so if you go back to pre-COVID, they were pushing through some 60 million a year in passenger numbers. This past 12 months, it's been down at about 5.5 million. So it's tiny compared to what it was.
Wow, that's a massive
difference. I think there are people that are driving across rather than flying across. Right. But I think, I think there's a real, and people have had the staycations, they've stayed in the UK, realize actually it's a pretty decent place to go on holiday.
It is, yeah.
And so I think there's an increase in numbers staying in the UK and going holiday in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
There is a change to that in the sense that if you fly to Spain, your chances are you'll go for 7 or 14 days. The staycation market is a later book. So people will literally ring up and say, have you got anything this weekend? On top of that, you've got a shorter break. So people will be booking, the sort of 3-night breaks as opposed to sevens.
Yeah.
In fact, when we were running our site, we used to get people booking 3-night breaks, which Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but they would go home late Sunday because it's school night. So,
yes.
But they didn't mind paying because they were able to stay around all day Sunday. So, and there's a lot of experience on holiday parts of that happening.
Is there? Well, you've also got the people working from home now, haven't you?
So
they've got a bit more flexibility and work from anywhere, so they could easily.
And they do.
Come on a Thursday.
They do.
In fact, I'm sure somebody told me that Thursday is the new Friday in terms of site arrivals.
I think you're getting a bit of that. I mean, a lot of changeover days are still Fridays and Mondays.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are getting the flexibility. I mean, we've got one client over in Essex, and they've got 2010. And he when COVID kicked in, he started doing one night stays. Which I thought was it's an expensive thing to do because you've got to do changeover, you've got to provide a help and buy, et cetera.
Yeah.
But he's been full all the way through. So actually it was the right thing to do. And in fact, what he said was the one nighters actually they do then say, can I have 2 nights? I'll come back and book.
Oh, okay.
And it's worked quite well.
So do you know, I know every business is different, but do you know roughly what sort of the nightly fee or to stay in one of your...
It varies very much.
Yeah.
So Holiday Park, let's look at Part D resorts. So down in the West Country, without facilities, so without internal showers and toilets, they'll be at about 1,400 a week. So roughly getting into that, so this is in peak.
Yeah.
Getting into that 180, 200 a night.
Yeah.
They do come down to, depending on positioning and so on, down to about 900. So it's going to be in that sort of bracket for no facilities.
Yeah.
If you put facilities in and you lux them up, I mean, we've got one client charging 650. So, it just varies so much.
Right.
But the average sort of market for these, as I say, properly done out with facilities inside, and depending on where you are in the country, can be anything between about $200 and $350 a night peak. It comes off that thing, but that's what you're looking at.
I suppose it depends what the park is providing as well in terms of other facilities and the standard of it.
It does, and those sort of prices. You know, if you're a farm and you've got three of these, your night rate's going to be high. I was at a farm yesterday, and they make they breed cattle, and they're diversifying and so on. And they're looking at putting five in, and they will be getting probably near 300 because amazing views, beautiful facilities, bit of a farm tour in there as well. You can go pack the calves,
so fresh eggs and stuff. Yeah.
Whereas, as I say, you go down to a West Country park with three of these, and you'd be down that sort of probably 150, 120 maybe, if you've got no facilities. That's the thing.
Right.
Makes a difference.
Yeah, I suppose that's true, yeah. So I'm really impressed. You mentioned earlier that you've got someone on a site in the Outer Hebrides.
We have.
So yeah. They must withstand some pretty substantial weather.
They can. I mean, the frames are specifically designed, and these are sold in New Zealand, and there's a legal requirement over there to wind ratings. So we have to get them rated.
How do you do that?
It's an engineering report. It's about 10 pages of completely incomprehensible figures. But there's a bit in there that says it will take about 4 to 10, 4 to 11. I think I can't remember exactly. But it will take it. And we do very well. I mean, we've got, as I say, we've probably got about 1,800, 2,000 of these in the UK now. And we don't really get any problems with them. They will take the wind, and we've got them in very exposed positions. What very heavy winds will do is it changes the maintenance program slightly.
Sure.
So when you're winterizing them, you pull the stuff away from the edges, the furniture.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there's not much else to do. But yeah, they'll take a huge amount.
That is impressive. And you mentioned New Zealand then. Are you exporting quite a lot as well?
Well, we're part of a network in that sense. So we do ours here. There's a distributor in America who gets them from the same factory, although I think he's going to start making them over there, which would make sense. There's a guy that used to live in Holland, now lives in Australia, so they do the down there.
Right.
So yeah, they're sold all over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you export into Europe, or is that a different market?
A little bit.
Got itself sorted.
Yeah, it is a different market. It's a lower quality market in the sense of the experience. So the European market has always been a camping market. There's always been, as we were talking earlier, but Eurocamp, ReadyCamp.
Yeah, you've got the weather, they're outside.
Exactly, the yeah. And so the tent doesn't have to be the same sort of quality.
Yeah.
Because, you're not going to get as much rain.
Yeah.
So it's a different market, and it's not really our market. We sell on the basis of high-end luxury. We sell on the basis of return on investment. We're looking at providing a holiday experience that people wouldn't normally do. If you're in France, or if you're in Holland or Germany or wherever else, going camping is a normal thing to do.
Yes, yes.
But over here, it still has that connotation of don't touch the canvas, it will leak, and sweaty.
Oh, I think people have had bad experiences over the years.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some great tents out there.
Yeah.
And there's some good, really good companies out there selling tents. But it's a different thing, and so it's not a natural. I mean, interestingly, we do sell into Ireland, but very little, because the Irish market is just not canvas friendly. They don't think of camping as being a natural, and it's weather.
Yes.
The Atlantic weather's coming in, and it's just not something they do.
They're right. It is funny, the cultural differences, isn't it, around Europe? But
totally.
I was in, the same with the caravan market as well.
Yeah,
the designs of caravans over there have been different for many years because of the lifestyle and the weather too.
Yeah.
I was down on a site in southwest France in the summer. Big, big site with the water park and everything. They do parks very well in France, I think. But there was a mixture of accommodation. We were there in a motorhome, but there was there were touring pitches, and even those pitches varied from a standard one to deluxe. Then you got super VIP with your own facilities, hot tub and everything. What was interesting was the diversification of other accommodation available. Yeah. So they were some fairly standard looking holiday homes, I think and then there were some more trendier or cooler looking ones with wood and outside showers and barbecues or whatever. They look pretty nice and really modern and very respectable. But there were some safari tents, and I don't know if they were yours or not, and I didn't look that closely. I don't know which company was marked. There were definitely Eurocamp on site, but it was a big European site, so it wouldn't have. In fact, there weren't that many English on the site at all, so I'm guessing a lot of those companies operating there were probably other brands that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, I mean, the French because Haven used to own a company called Haven Europe, and they had some parks out there, and that company became SeaBlue. But SeaBlue Holiday, well, Haven Europe never really got the booking traction in the UK, which is why they then moved out to, I think they're based in Bordeaux, and SeaBlue became, in effect, a French company.
Right.
I think it's still owned in the UK, but in effect, it's in
French. That's interesting.
And their bookings went up because, it's just not, it's a different marketing. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
And so, I think we've done a few.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got plenty of business in the UK, really.
Yes.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, that's good. Well, so let me just check my questions. Was there anything else you haven't covered? I'd wondered how the pandemic had affected you. Obviously, it must have gone a bit quiet, but then picked up a bit like the caravan world.
Yeah, it was quite strange, actually, because we closed down for about 6 weeks, I think. Mm. Then we didn't bring the team back quite a while, but we were still functioning. Because I was still working, but we were getting orders through, and quite a lot actually. So we were fulfilling them in a different way. But yeah, it worked. It was interesting. But the big difference was last year, because any of these projects are at least a year long, because you've got to think about it, and then you've got to get the planning, and then you've got to get the build done. And people tend to want to be open for Easter, so. During this 2022, so we've had a massive growth, because I think people in the COVID year weren't really doing that planning and building in the same way.
Must have been a bit nervous and difficult.
I think there was a bit of nerve. I think the thing that they did notice was the holiday park bookings went up during the COVID year because of the people staying in the UK. But so it's been an interesting time.
But I know there were a lot of people saying that the people that were staying in the UK were also a different type of customer that...
They are, yeah. I mean, you're getting people. It's apocryphal, but you talk to some of the parks, and there are more Range Rovers in the car park nowadays, and because people have learned that going through Gatwick Airport or those interminably long lines of passport control and security.
Well, and that's got worse because of Brexit, because now you have to get your passport stamped and you can't go down the EU line.
No, you can't. I mean, funny, I was in France, Switzerland last week, and I mean, Geneva Airport I fly in and out of Geneva a lot, and it's always been a nightmare airport because security's always been, it's sort of tacked onto the retail area. It doesn't really work very well. So you get these massive queues. And then their passport control, they've got three flights going out all at the same time, all from the same gate, all from the same group of gates.
Yes.
And they've got one passport call. And you just think, I don't need this grief. I really don't. It's just not worth it.
I've had the same experience with a few flights. I went to Switzerland recently as well, but also when I went to Germany. But to be fair, though, we had a similar experience when we came off the ferry in France in the summer. They only had two passport booths open for a whole ferry load of cars, motorhomes, caravans, etc.
I think the French just think they're being clever. I think they're going, well...
We felt they were being difficult on purpose.
Maybe. Exactly.
We were lucky we were quite near the front because we were at a motorhome, came out of the front, and we got clear quite quickly. But some people probably must have queued...
I think there were stories of 3-4 hours of queuing coming off the ferries and shit.
I was going to say an hour, but
I think there was a queue.
That's horrendous.
They need to sort that out. Well, the problem is it's the French and they're doing what they do, and it's them to provide the people to get into the passport boxes. And actually, I mean, it annoys me quite intensely. I mean, Switzerland, and if you notice when you go through Geneva Airport, there are signs. The passport signs say, this lane for Switzerland, EU and UK, but they've got the UK badge stamped out. It's taped off. So they're obviously thinking about it. And I can't see, I mean, what changed so much about people in the UK that they now have to have their passport checked and stamped?
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
I know.
Absolutely ridiculous.
The queues are much, much longer.
Yeah, they are. And it's affecting France because there are less UK people going on holiday in France.
Okay,
it is effective. More people staying here because it's too difficult to get through those
places. Yeah. And my other experience was we were going for a quick weekend to Switzerland for a special occasion. And our outward flight was cancelled by British Airways.
Happens.
Thank you. We managed to rearrange one, but we got there much later than we'd originally planned. And thankfully, the return one on us on the Sunday was fine.
It's funny, that's another thing. I was talking last week when I was in Switzerland and I said, the cancelled flights used to be fairly rare, but now you just sort of expect.
I was expecting it, really. Yeah. In fact, I'm away for half term next week. Yeah, and I'm flying on Monday.
Right.
And I'm anxiously checking my emails every day at the moment, exactly. Thinking, oh.
Well, I was in Italy at the beginning of half term. I'm getting put some holidays at the beginning of July, and we were in Tuscany for 10 days for a friend's wedding anniversary, and it's a big party. Coming back, there was a note saying, oh, sorry, flight's cancelled.
Mm.
And the only flight we could get was from Rome 3 days late. So we ended up having to get a train down from Tuscany to Rome, book a hotel in Rome, and then get the flight back from there. To be honest, I mean, you could get really cross and angry and stamp your feet, or go, I got 3 days in Rome. And true. Easy to pay for it.
Yeah.
So actually, we were complaining.
Depends how flexible you are. And if you've got, if you had young kids or something, it'd be horrendous. That time, it was just me and my wife. But next week, we've got the whole family going.
And
deadlines to get back for it ultimately.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
You know, dogs in doggy care.
That is the problem. I mean, we've got Abby, who's a marketing manager, actually house sits for us because she loves animals. And we've got horses here, obviously, as well. And she looks after them. So we were okay with that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's all those sort of practicalities. We were originally flying to Basel, just because that's where our friends are, and that's where we were flying back from. So we had to leave our car at Heathrow and ended up having to go across London to London City to then get a flight to Zurich and then a train back to Basel.
Which
meant we got there at a reasonable time otherwise. Because we were off to a later flight still to Basel, but it wasn't getting there till like landing at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, so we were at the airport and everything. It was just like, it wasn't such a practical option, really. So at least if you're traveling, the UK, you've got less of those. But I mean, I know we have traffic, but in reality, cool. This has been really interesting. So I've got a couple of sort of like quick fun questions I normally ask people at the end, which I did warn you about. So one of them is, if you had a magic wand and wanted to do one thing to help or change the caravan, straight glamping caravan industry, What would it be? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought about this, and actually, I think the caravan park industry works really well. I really do. And I was thinking about what you could do. I think the only thing I would do is I would increase the variety of options. I think we can talk about love to say, and I think having a much wider range of very high-end accommodation options would be the big change.
Because
there are still a huge number of parks out there that, you know, they go to the caravan manufacturers, they buy however many, and shove them in the rides, and that's just not the product anymore.
Right.
So I think I suppose my magic wand would rather rudely be to remove the people that have been running some of the park groups for decades and put some younger people in charge who are a bit more experienced.
For a new audience,
a new generation, it is. I mean, you know, the 25-45 bracket, which is the obvious target bracket. I just think they just want experience, and some park groups are getting it, some aren't. You know, there's a whole thing about hot tubs, but yeah, that's what I'd introduce younger minds.
Cool, that's good. You've also got a lot of experience in this area too. If you could have a holiday anywhere in the world in a caravan, or presumably for you it'd be a safari lodge, canvas lodge.
Wondering whether you could get a caravan or some Maldives. I wasn't sure.
You can get one of these lodges on the Maldives.
No, I mean, I think, where would I go? Iceland, I think.
Really? No one else has said that. That's novel.
I've always wanted to go there, and it's somewhere, again, it's experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's an amazing place with some amazing views. And, I think I'd probably go there.
That's a good choice. I would like to go as well, actually. I've been to northern Scandinavia, and that's just one step further, really.
It is.
And if you could have a barbecue on a campsite or a fire pit, I suppose, maybe with one of these, with three people, dead or alive, not related to them, what... Who would you choose?
Well, I had a different list when you sent the email through, but right now I'd have Ricky Sunak, Liz Truss, and Boris Johnson, because I just think that would be hilarious.
A bun fight.
It would be more than a bun fight.
Very, very topical.
Just be hilarious.
Wow, that'd be quite brave. Yeah, that'd be history, I suppose, at the same time, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. I mean, you know, the obvious thing is people say Churchill and, you know, Oscar Wilde and that sort of stuff, which I'm sure would be amusing and funny.
Yeah.
But I just thought, right now, that would just be the best evening ever.
Do you follow the Rest is Politics podcast?
No, I don't.
Oh, I recommend it. Yeah. Well, they've just done an emergency Well, they keep doing emergency episodes, because there's been so much going on. But they've just done, obviously, one about Liz Truss resigning yesterday as we record this. So it's run by Alistair Campbell.
Oh, I know the one. Sorry.
Yeah, and... oh, what's the other guy? Rory Stewart.
Yes.
So it's a really interesting mixture of view. I really love Alice's insight into the media and from a PR perspective. Yeah. But then Rory is obviously being a
politician
and very knowledgeable guy.
He's an amazing guy, actually. Yeah. He's so intelligent. I mean, he's one of those guys that just exudes intelligence.
And a complete encyclopedia.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I think the story of him, wasn't he? He was about, I think he was mid-20s. Wasn't he out in, was it Iraq or somewhere? And they made him ambassador or consul or something, which was his first sort of big step on the ladder. And, you know, I remember seeing him interviewed and just thought he knows his subject. It's a bit like Paddy Ashton, who was always, you know, that. He knew the Balkans. And when you've got someone that knows that much, I mean, they should really be put in positions that where the knowledge and experience...
He did put himself forward for...
he did.
To run for a prime
minister. He's too clever in some respects for the...
Or too nice, maybe?
Maybe, yeah, or too honest.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
You know, but a lovely guy. And,
I'm very impressed.
Huge amount of time for him.
Yeah, cool, lovely. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. It's been really interesting, I'm glad I've sort of looked into this side of the industry as well. It's been really obviously very knowledgeable. Thank you very much indeed.
That's right.
There we are. Thank you to Mark Scott. I hope the audio quality was okay there. It was great to see the lodges and hear about the future and the growth of his company. What an interesting sector it turned out to be. So that's it for this week. But next week, we delve into commercial vehicles and electric vehicles with an interview with Kate Thompson from Volkswagen Commercial Vehicles. And it's another interview that I've done while out and about, actually sitting in the very cool new all-electric Volkswagen ID Buzz. There's a Buzz and there's a Buzz Cargo, which we talk about the obvious interesting converters, because that's going to make a very cool camper van, hopefully one day. And also, obviously, the when will there be an all-electric California version of the ID Buzz. You can find out about all that next week. In the meantime, have a great time, stay safe, and I'll speak to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it and would really appreciate it if you could share it with as many people as possible. Even better, please give me a 5-star review in iTunes. It'd be a great help. If you'd like me to interview you, want to suggest someone to interview, or are interested in sponsoring this podcast, or want to get in touch with me for any reason, please drop me a line at john@rawlingscommunications.com or message me on Instagram @rawlings_comms. Thanks very much. Bye for now.